All right, y'all, let's do it. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to your absolutely favorite podcast. Whoa, whoa, whoa! Yeah, yeah, yeah! Welcome back to Real Them with Griffin! What's up, y'all? Welcome back. Today is a guest. We got a guest on the show today. We got Mr. Maz Jobrani back for his second time to talk about his special that he shot in Dubai. And we have some shop talk, and we talk about social media. We just go into a bunch of things as comics do when they get together. So I thank you guys for being here for that. Remember, I game every day on Twitch, Eric Griffin Gaming, but I just want to thank y'all for being with me. All right, I know I love doing the intro. It's my favorite part of the podcast. But yes, we're back with a guest. It's guest time. I occasionally gonna do bonus episodes during the week. I think when I do a guest, I'm gonna have a bonus solo on Wednesday. So that's how I do that. But anyways, I hope you enjoy this episode. And like I said again, you can catch me on Twitch, Eric Griffin Gaming. I do that all the time. I appreciate your comments, your support. I do have a Patreon, even though nobody really supports it. Even though I don't do enough on it, I was going to do stuff with Rachel, but now she started her own vlog, so I can't even like put those videos on Patreon. So I got to figure out what the hell I'm going to do on Patreon. And you know what? It's time for me to like really get like somebody. I say this all the time, but now this is real this time. Okay, officially, I need an intern. Somebody that lives in LA that is looking to help me out. And, you know, it could turn into paid some money. I don't know. It's not like I make a ton doing this, but I need somebody to like, so I could take the podcast to the next level. So I am looking out for that right now. So if you're out there, you can send me an email, eric@ericgriffin.com. I don't need resumes. I just need like a little blurb. Like just send me like, yo, this is what I do. This is what I could do. This is what I want to offer. And this is, you know, this is where I've done before. And let's see if we can get into a dialogue back and forth and see how it goes. And then maybe we'll test it out by I'll send some video footage to this person. They'll put it together what they think. And then maybe we'll like have a little contest with me and like, okay, how do you want it to be put together, like this or like that guy or this guy? And then we'll have people vote. Maybe we'll do it like that. But I don't know. But again, I need help with doing that kind of stuff. But anyways, I'm not going to go too long of an intro right now with all this stuff. So let's just, because I have a nice long interview with Maz Jobrani. So let's get right into it. And thanks for being here on the podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome again to the podcast for his second time now. I'm talking longtime friend. You say this a lot, but this is like for real longtime friend. Going back to the days of just starting comedy. Watch the first episode to find out our origin story. We're going to talk about other things now. But again, welcome to the podcast, my friend, Mr. Maz Jobrani.
Thanks for having me, man. I feel like number two. I don't know who I'm in competition with, but I know on Saturday Night Live, they have Tom Hanks, Steve Martin. There's a Alec Baldwin. They have a handful of guys who've hosted it 10, 20 times. So I'm a number two. I hope I work my way towards whatever that number is, Eric.
I know. So we're just old. I mean, because the way things are going, this is going to be the only form of entertainment that we're gonna have.
Dude, I already feel super old. You're on Clubhouse, right?
Don't even get me started on this Clubhouse. You know what's so crazy about it? Because we're around the same age. So, like, when we were growing up, we had to, for me to hit you up, I would call you, and we would talk on the phone. Mm-hmm. So these guys said, hey, let's go retro and make the young people think it's cool. They're literally just talking on the phone.
Eric, it's the craziest thing ever. So that's exactly how I got in. So you know, my boy Tehran. Uh-huh. Tehran opens for me on the road. He's funny. He's just a great guy all around. And he's charismatic. Always got something going on. So Tehran is like my lifeline to the youth. Because he knows what's up.
Yeah, I got you.
You know, he's in his early to mid-30s. So he hit me up. He's like, yeah, they're doing a comedy show on something called Clubhouse. And yeah. I was like, what? And it's exactly what you just said. It's so counterintuitive when these people in Silicon Valley come up with these ideas, because as comedians, or as, you know, on the Clubhouse, you got comedians, you got lecturers, you've got life coaches, you've got, you know, financial advisors, whatever it is. You would think the idea is to be seen. I want to be seen. Like, that's part of it. You're going, oh, how do we improve on Zoom? How do we improve, go to the next level? These guys go, let's go the other way. Let's get on that phone call. You and I are on a phone call and people are just listening in. And I did it and it was so much fun.
Yeah, it's ridiculous how many people are. Yeah, yeah.
Because it's fun. And also it's addicting. I've ended up on the Comedy Room a couple of times. One time I ended up on the Comedy Room and I stayed there for a couple, like maybe 2-3 hours. Next day I just logged on to see what's going on. That same room was still going.
Yeah, man. Well, I mean, that's the thing too about it too. Like if I just randomly call you, you might not even take the call. But if I sent you a link on Clubhouse and it's like Saturday, here's the things we're going to do on Saturdays. And where should you go and where should you not go? You might be like, oh, this is interesting. Hey, Eric, how you doing? I mean, it's so ridiculous to me, but like, it is what it is, you know?
You also know there are some people, like I'm listening. I think girls, women in general, now this is a generalization, but I think there's some truth to it. Women in general will hang out on a phone call longer than dudes will in general. So when you have a Clubhouse and there's 20 women on it and there's 10 dudes on it and 10 of the, and you know, 8 of those dudes are single and just hanging out anyway at their home or wherever it is, and they're insomniacs and they're comedians. You know how it is at the comedy club. Sometimes you keep talking and then you look around and like, oh my God, it's 2 a.m. and people are, and there's there's a group that's still going to go out and eat.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
once you combine all those people together, you could, I'm always the first person to leave. And it's funny because it says leave quietly, but it's hard to leave quietly when you've been talking and then just be like, plop. But you got to do it because I got a life.
What I don't like is I had to turn this off. It's like you get the notification and you go to click just to get to the app and then it just puts you in a room, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm just in this room and somebody's like, Eric Griffin, what's up? And I'm like, I didn't want to do that. I don't like you people.
That's funny. But I will tell you, I feel at least a few times I've done it, it feels for us, for people in our life, in our you know, careers and what we do, it's a very lively kind of, you know, like for example, on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook, I'll post something. I don't know how many people are real. I don't know how people are fake. I don't know what's going on. But Clubhouse feels like right now it's really hot and you can get either it could help your social media following. It could also help. I met a guy who I hope it's going to work out, but he's really good at like turning existing videos on like comedy videos into passive income on social media. And he seems legit. So I'm talking to him about, hey, how do I take my 7 specials or whatever it is that I have?
Right.
And
boom, 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 monetize. Those. Yeah.
You know,
that's the wave of the future. I don't know. I mean, it's just like, you know what? I think that being old, and I talked about this when I do solo episodes, but you know, I love to talk, bounce it off someone else who understands where I'm coming from. But you know, it's like, I think that you really are looked at as old when you don't change with the times. You know,
yes.
So you look at social media and you might think like, I'm good with Facebook. That's when you're old. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
When you're like, you know, it's like you already had trouble going from MySpace to Facebook. And so you're still like, I miss my MySpace. That's when you're like, you're old. But, you know, but things are moving so fast right now that they're becoming obsolete before I can even, let me get on this. And then it's like, it's already gone. You know what I mean?
Like this year was like 10 years of technology and change in one. So right when it started, I remember I was talking to some guy at Patreon. He's like, you got to put up a Patreon. I tried to do that. I didn't feel comfortable asking people for money at that time.
Right.
So I kind of took my foot back. And then the next thing you know, like you said, it's like, oh, then Cameo. And then it's this in Clubhouse and da, 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 da. And I think, as performers, as writers, as artists, as comedians, I think you're right. Because I look at guys, when we started out at the Comedy Store, there were guys who were coming around who were older, and their style, even the way they dressed, everything they were talking about was still you know, we were there early 2000s. They were still doing jokes from the 90s and 80s, or their style was that. And you're going, oh my God, this poor guy is collecting the $15 check. And then I don't know where else they're making a living. Maybe they're doing the road or whatever. But then you look at guys that you want to emulate, and you look at a guy like a Jerry Seinfeld or a Chris Rock, or even, even people like Kevin Nealon, some of these guys that are older than us that have been out there, but they're still writing, they're still creating. So then they have their older fans, but they also, because you and I both know, we were comedy fans first. So yeah. My kid's 12 now. My kids love listening to stand up, and they'll be listening to Netflix as a joke or whatever. And Brian Regan comes on, and John Panette, and whoever comes on, they're into it. So I think the key is to keep writing, to keep trying to stay relevant. Even like you were talking about Clubhouse, last night I ended up on, there's these rooms, they get together and they go, shoot your shot. Have you heard about shoot your shot? You know what that is?
No.
Shoot your shot is basically, it's almost like a spin the bottle. It's like a pickup game. So
oh, right. That's what they I
all get. Yeah, they all get in one room and they'll bring somebody up from the audience. They go, who do you want to shoot your shot at? Oh, I want to shoot my shot at whoever the girl is. And oh, okay. And then if she says, yeah, okay, fine, go ahead and DM me, then the guy's got to go and DM her. And I don't know, whatever happens from there, it happens. Or they go, I want to shoot a shot for friendship or whatever it is. So they were doing that. I didn't know. I kind of knew what it was, but I kind of didn't. But Tehran and Max were on the list. So I was like, let me see what these guys are up to. I go in there and they're telling
people,
me what they're doing.
Two people I don't want a shoot shot at.
Well, no, I started laughing. I was like, what the hell am I doing in here? And then jokingly, I was like, listen, my wife and I, we are actually in need of, if you are good at cleaning or plumbing or you have any applicable skills, shoot your shot. We'll take you into our family. Like, we'll take you. But I did feel like as I'm looking at all these people, I go, oh my God, these people are in their mid-20s, late 20s. And I go, wow, that makes you feel old. I'm going to be 49 this month. And it makes you feel old, and they probably look at me as like an uncle type or whatever. But regardless, when it comes time to creating and being on stage and talking about stuff, if you see my show now, I'm talking about all the shit going down under COVID. I got jokes about Instagram. I got jokes about Clubhouse. I got jokes. I'm not just doing it to like be hip. I'm doing it because it interests me. So you got to stay interested in what's happening.
Well, I mean, okay, I agree with you, but the thing is that you have to remember too is that just because we're trying to stay relevant doesn't mean the young people want us to be relevant. You know, there are certain things that it's like they go, what is the 49-year-old doing on TikTok? You know what I mean? There's a certain thing that kids, young people are kind of like, hey, can we have our thing? You know what I mean? Like, this is our thing. Like, there's a certain, to me, there's an age cap on certain things. You know, it's like Coachella, you know? You know, you're 50 at Coachella. They're looking at you like, what are you doing here? You go to Burning Man or whatever. You know, even if it's a not right attitude, I feel like there's a little bit of that going on. You know, it's like when WAP was a big thing, you know, everybody was, you know, and you had all these like women on, you know, putting posts up. Oh, my WAP. I mean, I think there's a certain point where young people are like, yeah, you're past WAP age.
Well, I'm going to counter that and look at like J-Lo and you look at some of these other people. I'm not saying,
outliers,
I'm not saying be in denial. I'm not saying be in denial of who you are. Cause also as comedians, our job is to be a little curmudgeonly. I have also the past few years I went to Berkeley for undergrad, and they've asked me to do, me and Samuel Bates. Sammy's also an alumni from there, an alumni. I don't know which one was which.
Alum.
So we've done comedy shows for the incoming freshman class the past, I don't know, 4 years, which is a trip when you do that because it really makes you do the math. So the first time I did it, I did the math and I thought to myself, wow, I was at Cal. I came into Cal in 1989, another summer. He's hitting you hard, brothers and sisters. But it was 1989, and that dates you too, or dates me.
Both of them.
But I did the math, and I was like, okay, if I had someone my age come and talk to me and do a comedy show for me in 1989, that would have meant they had been at Cal, I think it was like 1959 or something, like 30 years ago. And so in my mind, I'd be sitting in the audience going, who is this old mofo
No, they are saying
that. What do I have
that
in common? You know? But then what I did was, because I was intimidated by that, by the way. Because a lot of times people ask you, they go, as comedians, you ever get nervous? I go, I get nervous. I don't get nervous when I'm in a different country. If I'm in a different country in front of a bunch of parents, I could be in Timbuktu and do parenting material and they'd be like, yeah, my kids are the same. You know, I get nervous when I'm talking to a bunch of 12-year-olds or 5-year-olds. So the generational thing.
Yeah.
But what I was able to do, and this is something I think we learn as we go, was to try and meet them in a conversation that we had in common. So there was a lot of talk about, you know, doing some crowd work and going, you know, do you guys like I was trying out this joke about how I realized I could never be a doctor when they brought out the frog on that Petri dish in fifth grade and the formaldehyde. And I was like, that is disgusting. And I go, what do you want me to do? We want you to cut it open and pull out a fly. I'm like, are you out of your goddamn mind?
Yeah.
And as part of that joke, I was kind of making fun of saying, I said, I don't even know if they do that anymore because maybe it's cruel to frogs. Like, what are you guys using now? You dissect bread? What do you guys do? And so that, I think, you know, they're smart enough at that, in those teenage years, to get that. And I'm not pretending to be like, I'm not going like, so anyway, guys, you know, what's up, hipsters? You know, you understand what I'm saying? As long as you got your point of view.
I get what you're saying, but there is a little bit of delusion to what you're saying right now. I mean, I'm just being 100 with you. Because I'm living it too. But listen, you are the old guy, and there are a lot of young people in the crowd who are going to be like, oh, this is my dad. And it's like, oh, it's cool. You know, it's like when you go, they go like, oh, you're doing dad jokes. Like, what does that really mean when you say dad jokes? Yeah. I mean, that's what you try to, you go like, let me stop doing that. Cause you know, you don't even realize you're doing it because you think like, no, this is cool. What am I doing? Like, you know, but then it takes a young person to go to you and go, oh yeah. Like I do some stuff on my podcast sometimes. I get all these beats get sent to me for these musicians, you know, and then I'll like impromptu rap on there. And then I'll see the comments and people go, oh, I'm here for this dad shit. That's what they say. And I'm thinking about it. And I go, oh, I totally get it because yeah, I'm the old guy doing my thing, you know, and what I'm saying, there's nothing wrong with that. But what I'm saying is like there, that generational gap, it can't be taken away. We just have to live in it. I like when a person comes, you know what I mean?
Because
they're laughing for different reasons, man.
But also fuck those motherfuckers because there's always some like judgmental little shit. Who's going to be like, eh, and I'll be like, you know what? When I was 10 years old, I was listening to Bill Cosby and laughing. I was listening to George Carlin with his gray hair, and what he was saying was relevant. So you and I could still be social commentators, and we're still going to get laughed at by some young punk who's like, But there's also going to be a lot of kids who are fans of comedy, as long as you and I aren't doing like, you know, as long as like the whole set isn't, I don't know, you know, like you know, again, going back to, there were some guys who we would see at the clubs who were doing stuff and you're going, God, this guy's got to write. I mean, writing, that's one of Eddie Murphy's biggest obstacles right now is what's he going to talk about when he comes back? He's this super, you know,
which is why
famous,
he hasn't come
super,
back.
Yeah. So part of that though is to nip it in the bud, right? Is to get, I'll give you an example. I just did an outdoor show at some like, It's an outdoor show in Hollywood. It's a club. Mark Saratella runs it. It literally is a nightclub that had an outdoor patio. Now they've turned that outdoor patio into a comedy show.
Oh, I've been to that. They canceled it because I was there doing a show there. And you know how it's like broadcasted out onto La Cienega?
Yeah.
Well, that big expensive building that's $13,000 a month, they called the cops. And
oh,
then
funny.
I was on stage and he comes up and goes, this is the last comic.
That's funny. Wait, no, if you were in Los Angeles, mine was in Hollywood.
Oh.
But regardless, the fact is, as I was doing it, so it was Jeff Ross, it was Taylor Tomlinson, talk about young and funny, right?
Yeah.
Then it was Jeff Ross, then it was Jeremy Piven, and then it was me. Now, I'm looking around the room, and I was talking to Jeff Ross about it. I go, Jeff, I'm looking at this crowd, because they're a club crowd. And I go, this reminds me of Dublin's. I go, this is the Dublin's crowd. Back in the day when everyone was all hipstery and there's people with like, you know, people look like, there's a lot of Johnny Depp looking type dudes, but in their 20s and 30s. And there's a lot of like young girls. I mean, there was a couple of young girls in the back who were clearly drunk, who clearly like knew the owner of the place. And because Jeff brought up, Jeff's like, I'm going to roast somebody. And he goes, here, you guys come up. So he brought up Gene Simmons' son. I guess Jeff knows him or something, with his girlfriend. And the girlfriend.
Nick Simmons is his name.
What's that?
Nick Simmons.
Yeah, Nick Simmons. So he brings them up to roast them. And these two girls are in the back and they're drunk. And I guess they know Nick Simmons' girlfriend. So every time Jeff says something funny, these girls go, wee, yeah, wee, and just like disrupting to the point where I heard some lady in the audience kind of turn around and was like, would you just shut the fuck up? But they were too drunk to even notice. And I'm sitting there watching this and I'm like, oh my God, all right. These guys are going up. They're having good sets. And I'm just, and it's cold as hell. And I'm going, okay, how am I going to like, is my set going to translate here tonight? Because it's very hipstery. And I just come from the Laugh Factory where I did a Zoom show and that translated because it was a lot of like, oh my God, under the lockdown, life has been like this, Zoom, yeah, boom, yeah, boom,
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So you and I know it's like after 22 years of doing this, you find the key to relate to any audience. So before I went up, Jeremy's doing his set and part of his set is how bitter he is at like John Stamos and at The Rock and some of these other guys because they're working. And he's like he ran into Stamos and Stamos said something stupid to him, but they, you know, they're friends. He's just being funny about it. And he goes, Stamos said this, this, and this. And I was like, I got 3 Emmys, motherfucker, you know? And then, and then Jeremy in a self-deprecating way will be like, God, I'm so bitter. I'm so bitter. So that was my key. I was like, wait a minute. This motherfucker has 3 Emmys and he's bitter. I go, I haven't even lasted to season 2.
Yeah.
So that became the joke, right? So as soon as I went up, I was like, and so it doesn't matter if you're young, old, doesn't matter who's in that room. I went up and I was like, Jeremy, how many Emmys you guys think? I got 3. I go, dude, I'm a Middle Eastern actor. We die in season 1.
Yeah.
You know, the hell you complaining about? And bum, 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 bum. So all of that to say, I totally agree with you. I'm not saying, because the worst thing you can be is, and it's sad, we've seen this. We've seen guys either at comedy clubs, but usually see them at like bars and nightclubs where you're like, oh my God, that dude is too old to be hanging out with that crew. We've seen that.
Yeah.
And that's a bad situation.
What is a certain self-awareness that, like, you know, sometimes we just get lost in? I mean, I think that being at, like, for instance, being at the Comedy Store, you know, when you, because look, there's a new generation that are coming up, and you know, and you hear a lot of the older comics all continuously talking about cancel culture and everybody's too sensitive. And then the young people are like, nah, we're not sensitive. So that's an example of not moving with the times.
Yes.
You know, it's a perfect example of not like, it's like, you know, it's like that. And it's something that is hard to understand for like people of our age group sometimes, just to be like, why are you so sensitive? You know, but you know, when they're just saying like, well, maybe we don't like, you know, the things you're saying, you know what I mean? You know, it's like, it's
great
funny
example.
To, you know, it's funny to me, like, you know, like Chappelle, you know, he did that. You saw that clip about how he's talking about Comedy Central, you know?
Yeah.
And it's funny because he said to like about Netflix, you know, he's like, he said, it didn't make me feel good is what he said about why they were playing the Chappelle show. And to me, I thought to myself, well, I guess that's what the transgender people are saying to him. Your jokes don't make me feel good. You know what I mean?
Good point. Yeah.
You know, so it's like, it's one of those things you just kind of go, uh-oh. You know what I mean? But, you know, it's just like, it's one of those moments where you just go, it's like, you know, we are of a certain age and we have our way. And then there is a sort of wiseness that people want to listen to that. And their demographic is not 18 to 25. But you know, when you're in Hollywood, that's the only demographic they're going for. But comedy just doesn't necessarily work like that. So there's always like a disconnect, and the greats can get past it, you know. But even the greats that get past it, there's still going to come a time where the people are going to be like, oh, that guy's too old, and they're going to have a different audience. It's not going to be mainstream, you know.
Well, let me say this. First of all, you're absolutely right. That's a good point you hit on. So first of all, it doesn't matter how great of a comedian you are as a human being, if you're not evolving, you are out of touch. So we have, like, I don't know if you follow Mandy Patinkin and his wife on Twitter. Their son has been documenting their lockdown. And it's the funniest, sweetest, and yet most sincere and charming thing you'll see, because he gets them arguing, he gets them doing whatever it is, and they are leaning into their age, but at the same time, they're very hip. It's kind of like the Betty White syndrome, right? Yeah, Betty yeah. White, 100 years old, but people are like, I love Betty White. I want, you know, kids are like, I want to hang out with Betty White. So similarly, if you're open and willing to change, as you just said, sorry, but if you have to be willing and willing to do that. And I'll tell you what that reminded me of a little bit, because you talk about this cancel culture and how comedians go, oh no, you know. So I had a guy on my podcast, Back to School with Mal Gibrani. Watch it, find it anywhere you can. I had on my podcast this guy named Jordan Shapiro. He's an author, and he's written kid books. And one of the books was all about how screen time for kids isn't as bad as we think it is. And the second thing he wrote is called How to Be a Feminist Dad. But really, it's about how to be a respectful, and what you just said, open human being to other people's points of views. And one thing he told me that blew my mind, I hadn't even thought about this. He goes, we all go through our days as the hero of our own stories.
Yeah.
But we forget that we are the villain in other people's stories, or the side character.
Yeah.
And we need to remind ourselves that they're the heroes of their own stories. And that sometimes we gotta open ourselves up and go, wait a minute, let me see how I play into your story. So the way it worked for me was, I said, oh my God, that just made me realize my little beautiful 10-year-old daughter, every once in a while, I will have, you know, cooked whatever, cleaned the dishes, done the laundry, taken the dog for a walk, taken the kids to practice, blah, 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 blah. Finally put my feet up on my bed, open up my Twitter, it's me time, and my daughter comes out and goes, Daddy, and I go, what? And I roll my eyes.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, what an asshole. And I go, you know what? I'm going to start working a little bit on realizing she's got her own day going. She's the hero of her story. And I got to, rather than feeling frustrated, I got to go, what's going on? How can I be, you know, of service to you here? Because I love you.
Yeah.
And so similarly, what you just said, this cancel culture thing, you're right. When these young people come at you and they go, hey, we're not too sensitive. We just feel like you're old and outdated.
Or they're saying you're just being mean, or you're just being like, pick any of those adjectives that they like to use. Like, okay, we're being misogynistic. You're being mean. You're being, you're insensitive to pick a group. Yeah. You know what I mean? And then it's like, we come from this era where it's like, well, we're just telling jokes. This is comedy. And it's like, so now we're, what I really feel is, cancel culture has always been present. They just didn't have a voice or a platform to put it out there. That's what I'm starting to realize, you know, because like, let's say there was Twitter and Instagram and all this stuff, even during the days of George Carlin, there might, like, he for sure would have been somebody who would have, people would have been like, I don't like what, you know, he's saying this about this. And, you know, the Christians would have got on him, but it just wasn't present. So now that there's a voice for all of this, and there's a, you know, platforms, I'm, you know, maybe it's something that's always been there. I don't know. But, you know, I just feel like it's something to think about, you know, as these movements come by, like, you know, Me Too was a big one. It was a big one to just sit back as a guy and be like, oh yeah, maybe saying this joke like this, I didn't realize how it's making these people feel. Cause I'm, now you go, okay, so as a comic, you gotta be a little smarter. You gotta be a little, you know, more savvy in how you do your joke to say the same joke to get the same point across. So, you know.
Amen. And you gotta be open to their, cause you know, there's people who just blindly just will see a word and take it out of context and be like, oh, you said this and that. Like I on my Netflix special, I did a couple jokes that, at least to me, seemed like they were pro LGBTQ.
Yeah.
But there was some guy who kind of jumped on it, and having had Chappelle do some jokes, he's like, oh, Netflix, here's another Netflix comedian making fun of the LGBTQ. I'm like, did you listen to what I said? I'm trying to tell my community to be open-minded to LGBTQ. You're not listening to what I'm saying. That said, I would be open for a conversation with this person if they said to me, but yeah, but the way you say it, it can be misconstrued.
Yeah, and you know, and what? Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead. No, because it's just, I have something with this too.
I got something else after that. Go.
Yeah, no, I'm just, it's like, this is when you can't worry about individuals, because there's no point in us trying to convince someone, because they've already been convinced. They are convinced. They've said, you are now a whatever. You know, you're this is hate speech to them. and trying to rationalize it with them. It's like, no, I'm talking about this. You can't work. Like, at a certain point, we also have to be like, this is me. I'm going to do what I do, and you move on, because there's always going to be people like that because they live for that. There are people that literally live for trying to make your words fit their narrative.
You're absolutely right. And I like what you said, which is you got to be you. This is me. And that's what I was getting at actually as well, which is ultimately be your authentic self. In a convoluted way, one could say that's what Trump did and made him so likable to his group, because he was his authentic self.
For sure. Similarly, for sure. His group, by the way.
What's that?
It's not just his group, by the way. You personally know a lot of people that secretly support Trump.
No,
but they don't want to say it out loud.
What I'm saying is, by being your authentic self, I think people go, okay, that's who that guy is. You know, at least I know who that guy is, and I could either latch on or not latch on. And for us, for example, I feel like one thing I've gotten from this younger generation, and I want to try doing it, is so when you and I first started out, back then I was a big fan of Peter Sellers from the Pink Panther, and I still think he's super talented.
Yeah, so one of the great comedic actors. One of the great comedic actors of his all time.
Yeah, he's just so. So in the Pink Panther, he plays a French guy. In The Party, he plays an Indian guy. In Dr. Strangelove, he plays multiple different backgrounds. And so I'm watching that, and I'm like, oh my God, I want to do that. I want to play Mexican. I want to play Indian. I want to play all this stuff. And back then, we were able to, and we were doing it, and we do with the accent. And really, you would try as an actor, I think.
Now cancel, but now cancel culture is like, you need to hire an Indian person to be an Indian person. And you need to hire, it's like, so should we get a serial killer to play a serial killer, or is there any acting at all?
but that's what I'm getting at. First of all, in my opinion, if you watch The Party, he's got an Indian accent, but really his character is the lovable hero of the film. So it's almost like he's doing, in my opinion, he's also, even though he's in brown face, he is trying his best to do a positive character there. And at that point, probably that movie got made because Peter Sellers was on board. So let's face it, there was no East Indian actor that could have, in Hollywood, they would have made that movie around. So let's just put that aside. And so when you get that part, when you get, like, I played an Indian on a TV show for ABC, I tried to make him fun and lovable. And I tried to make, like, the accent wasn't the joke. I wasn't like, oh, let's laugh at these people. But some people will construe it as that. They'll say, no, you are making fun of those people.
Yeah,
so with that said, I've actually evolved as an actor. And now when I talk to my agents and stuff like that, when it's time to create stuff, I go, I want to be as close and authentic to who I am in my characters. Sure, I play a serial killer, but how about if I play him like this, as opposed to having to do something, you know, that's far away from who I am.
But that's a creative artistic choice that people are going to make, whatever. And however popular a person is, they can overcome certain things. But what we're finding out now, so that's what I'm saying, there is a segment of the population who, it doesn't matter. We can rationalize this all we want. Like, we're trying to make sense here. We're trying to say, like, hey, you know, not everybody's reasonable. Not everybody wants to use common sense. People like being outraged. There is a certain love for that on the internet. People like finding things to be like, this is ridiculous. I can't believe they hired a black person to play this, or I can't believe they hired a, you know, there's people that they have their things and they feel justified. You know, it's like when you have a character in a book, they have some beloved book, you know, like Hunger Games, you know, here's an example. And then they made one of these characters, a little black girl. And there were people who were like, she's not black in the book. Why is she a black? You know, so they have their justification for that. And then there's other people who be like, well, that's seems racist. Why are you, like, you know? And then everybody feels right. And so it's just like, that's what I'm saying, is like trying to navigate and understand that is now the challenge, you know?
Because
like, I remember having a joke about, I had this joke when I first started, I was talking about, I don't drink, and every time I go out I have to be the designated driver, you know? And I would say, you know, when you're the designated driver, at the end of the night it's like taking care of autistic kids. They just all over the place, you know? So to me, that's like, of course, you're going to have people, you know, my son is autistic, and this is like, and in my mind, I rationalize it like, isn't it tough taking care of him? You know, like for me, you should laugh at the joke the most because you know how it is to take care of an autistic kid, you know? But there are people who are like, you can't do jokes like that. They don't, like how you said, didn't you hear what I said? Didn't you listen to what I said? It's like, so how, like me getting into an argument with this is just, it is what it is, you know? So sometimes, you know, sometimes it's just, it's a wash.
Well, it's, yeah, it's again, you're being your authentic self and also knowing, listen, the other thing that we have to navigate in this world, not just us, but everybody, is what you put out in public and what you might say in private, yeah. Right? So, you know, there's certain words or certain, like, I try not to cuss too much in public. I mean, on stage, I'll do it sometimes, but I just, you know, if I'm on certain, you know, on Instagram live, I try not to cuss too much because I know that video is going to be up. And if my kids see it or whatever, it's like, now I'm a foul mouth, you know what I'm saying? And not to say I hate that. As a matter of fact, I love saying motherfucker. And sometimes, and by the way, sometimes these dudes, because during your IG live, you have a troll come on, you know, and yeah. They'll be like, blah, 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 blah. So I love cussing them out because it feels good to cuss. But that said, like in private, I love cussing. So whatever that is, there's certain things that you nowadays, you feel like, okay, I can say that in private. And I got to be careful what I say in public. But I think ultimately the thing in my mind is as long as you're your authentic self and you're not trying to pretend to be somebody else, right? If you're not trying, some people, you know, it's the moment you start doing things based on market research, then you're not the artist anymore, yeah. Right? Now you're a jukebox. You're taking requests. Now you're whoever it is that your advisor said, you know, you got to put out more videos that are like this. And you got to, you know, I'm like, oh, God.
I hate that, too. They hit you up like, hey, look, you know, this person's doing this. You should do that. I can't stand that. Yeah. But here's my one pushback on what you're saying. But I think we're going to be in agreement. Being your authentic self doesn't mean that that is a viable thing for entertainment, you know? Because I give you an example of something like, I have more respect for South African racism than I have for American racism, because at least they let you know. Right. Apartheid was like, we don't like black people and we want them living over there. It wasn't underground. It was like in your face, you know?
Right, right.
South African racism is their authentic self. You know what I mean? But yeah. It doesn't mean that it's like, okay, well, that's not good for the sake of being good, you know, just because somebody's doing that. And it just goes to like what the thing you're saying is, and by the way, I'm saying I don't like racism. See, now I have to like clarify my words. I'm just using an analogy of just being you have to say that because these idiots are going to write comments. And no matter what I say, they're still going to write comments. But
Eric Griffin likes racism.
I know. So the thing is, being your authentic self and what you're talking about public life, not everything you say needs to go on the internet. Like this chick, I was looking up her name just so I could get it right. Gina Carano, you know, the one that got kicked off The Mandalorian. You know, she had these Twitter.
I don't know what this was. Oh, story?
Man, what it was happened? A big story, man. She had these Twitter posts that she, Instagram or Twitter about comparing how people, I don't want to like mess it up, but you know, they made her out to be anti-Semitic. Okay.
Okay.
All right. And when I read the thing, I was like, I thought it was a stretch to go that far with it because I actually understood what she was trying to say. It just wasn't a good analogy. In the same way that my South African analogy might not be, somebody might be, you know, if anybody can misconstrue things, then you might have to think to yourself, maybe I shouldn't say it like that. Well, she said some things that she probably would have to say with people who have nuance in their conversation and can push back and be like, well, do you mean this? When you just put out stuff, people can't interact to get like the root of it. So she put this thing out and she got fired, you know?
Wow.
Yeah, she got fired. She's now off the Mandalorian forever. And this is one of these moments where it's like, you don't got to say every single thought, especially political thoughts, when you're a public figure on the internet. It's not your...
You know what I mean? And sometimes if you let it... Because listen, there's also this funny, you know, desire obviously to get more likes, to get more followers, to get more whatever that is. So in your mind, there's been times where I'm like, oh yeah, that's a good one. Let me put that out there. And like you said, if I step away from it for, you know, 12 hours, 24 hours, sometimes I come back and I go, ah, that's not really worded the best way. Or at least run it by somebody or say it out loud to somebody you love and know and go, what do you think of this? And if they go, oh, that's hilarious, and you trust them, then perhaps you go for it. But that said, it's just, you're absolutely right. You don't have to put out every thought. Look, I put out like sometimes the thoughts you put out, like I put one time I was just like, I just watched something on the news and it inspired me to write something without thinking too much. Post set. And there's a guy named Don Winslow who's an author. His books have been turned into movies and stuff. And he's got a huge social media following on Twitter from the left. And the thing I posted was very on the left. So he reposted it. And the next thing I know, this thing that I just kind of threw out there without really thinking about it had like 20,000 likes. And I was like, holy shit, that's the most likes I've ever gotten. And you're absolutely right in that we don't have to share every thought and every idea thinking that it's going to do something for us, because we also don't know which one of your comments are going to be the ones that are going to be more liked and appreciated.
Which ironically shows how we have become more sensitive, mm-hmm. you know, because it's like, especially with like all the allegations against comedians, mm-hmm. you know, there's a part of you that like I've started to pen a tweet, you know, that might be like pro male, I guess, or like, you know, come on, there's no evidence with those kind of tweets. You know, you have these kind of thoughts where you're just like, you know, it's like there's no due process. There's no. And then you stop yourself and you go, I don't know if I need to say this to the public. I can have these thoughts with myself and my friends. I don't need
Listen, we've had friends of ours who have gotten into trouble, and I have, for the most part, reached out and said, hey, I'm here as a friend, and you know, I didn't get into the details of it or anything, just letting them know that I'm, you know, I'm still their friend. But as you said, because you have a choice to make, because if you go on social media and you put it out there, you're not in front of a judge. You're not in front of a court with rules and regulations. You're in this like jungle.
It's a mob.
And now you got to start trying to explain yourself. I mean, you'd be like, for me, my personal battle comes with, there is a group of Iranian Americans who are towards the right leaning, and there's a handful of them who basically feel that America should somehow go and overthrow the Iranian leadership, who are the mullahs, the clergy, the current dictatorial regime that's there, somehow overthrow them and bring democracy to Iran. Now, I agree with them on their final goal, which is I too want democracy for Iran. I want, you know, human rights. I want women's rights, LGBTQ rights. I mean, it's a very oppressive regime. But I don't agree with their tactic of somehow having America go surgically remove just the leadership. I don't know how you bomb or assassinate.
Well, they did it.
These people.
We know how to do it.
But that's the point. They killed one guy. See, like they'll point at that. They'll be like, oh, they'll say to me, like they'll come on social media sometimes and they'll say, oh, you're a sellout and you support the regime. And there was an organization that I had, done performances for and stuff in the past. And they've claimed that organization is somehow in cahoots with the government. But really what that organization was calling for was diplomacy, which is what the Iran deal was. And I personally am anti-war, and I believe in diplomacy, whether it's with Iran or Iraq or anyone, whoever. So, and also furthermore, I know that if a war were to be started between Iran and America, that, I don't know, hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of innocent Iranians would have to die for something to really happen, innocent Iranians. So anyway, all that to say, once in a while, these guys will attack me, especially under Trump, when Trump was talking tough and he's like, I'm going to get a better deal. I'm going to get rid of the regime. And as you said, Trump's administration kills this guy, Soleimani, who's a bad guy. And these people go, see, he's tough. He killed Soleimani. I go, yeah, but then what was the plan after that? Yeah. There was no plan after that. It was like, let's kill that guy and then sit back and see what happens. And Iran was like, okay, now we're going to launch some bombs into Iraq and go after some American soldiers. Anyway, all of that to say, I don't agree with them politically in terms of how to get rid of this totalitarian regime. So
what you're talking about, and this is one of my favorite words I say on the podcast. There's actually a drinking game for it. Life is nuanced, man.
Yeah.
You know, and the internet isn't.
Exactly. So what'll happen is, once in a while, these guys will attack me. Part of what they do is they attack anyone who's pro-diplomacy. So there's a lot of westernized Iranians who've grown up here, who are more left-leaning, who were critical of Trump, whether they're journalists, they're public figures, whatever. Every once in a while, I'll just be going through my Twitter and one of these guys has picked up a picture of me at some event and he's like, oh, you're part of that organization. And then all of a sudden they start piling up. And what you just said, I'm sitting here going like, do I want to get into an argument with some cuckoo on an app where it's like 200 characters? I got to go back and forth. Yeah, how much of my life am I going to put into trying to convince this person that I'm not getting paid by the Iranian government?
Yeah.
Right. And so similarly, when friends of ours have been in trouble, or when somebody, you really got to step back and go, do I want to jump into this fire right now? You know what I'm saying? And get into a little Twitter war with somebody.
Well, it's not even about getting into a war. It's about just trying to make a statement, because it's like, for some reason, if you like support your friend, or if you're trying to say, you know, if it turns out your friend has done something wrong, so now the mob is telling you that you have to cut that person off forever. You can't have any kind of empathy, because if you have empathy for your friend, it means that you're pro whatever, you know,
right?
Whatever the bad. And so then you just kind of go, but so I'm saying, this isn't for 200 characters. Like, my empathy I have for my friend shouldn't necessarily be for that. And similarly, though, like, even with podcasts, you know, I've said things on podcasts and, like, you know, on my own podcast or whatever. It's funny, like, I've had my fiance on my podcast a lot recently, because I don't, you know, it's hard having guests. And so, and it's funny how the same video, and you look underneath, you see the comments. So you'll have a comment, oh my God, you guys have the greatest relationship. Another comment on the same video, man, this is cringe. They are so uncomfortable with each other. You know, and then somebody else, they're so sweet together. This is my relationship goals. And so that made me realize, I was like, oh, I can't try to please. That's the moment where you go, look, I'm just being my authentic self. This is what it is. If you want to perceive it the way you want to perceive it, it's fine. So what we have to learn to do, what we've had to learn to do as comics and like performers, is get past our insecurity, which is like, we're rooted in insecurity. That's the whole reason why we became comics. And it's one of them. It's a core underneath psychological thing of why we became comics, is insecurity. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's there at all times. Mm-hmm. So we just have to find ways to just like, being okay with not everybody's gonna like you.
Yeah, well, that is absolutely true. And as you said earlier, that's been going on forever. But back in the day, if they didn't like George Carlin, they would have to go to the stationery store, buy some paper,
right,
write a letter, mail it out, you know, da 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 da. But you're right. As a matter of fact, one of the moments when it really landed for me, because early on under YouTube, I had this similar experience. I posted something and someone was like, oh, this guy's hilarious. And the next guy was like, I love this guy. And the next guy was like, this guy sucks. And then the next guy was like, you're an idiot. Now they're arguing. And I'm like, what the hell just happened? And I remember watching Letterman. I think like Lady Gaga or somebody was on there. But Letterman goes, oh, by the way, folks, they just made there's free Wi-Fi in Central Park, which is great for me, because at lunchtime I take my laptop out there and read all my hate mail. And that's when it dawned on me, go, holy shit, David Letterman must get thousands and thousands of hate mail, you know, letters every day, because he's saying stuff that someone's going to find insensitive.
Yeah.
These late night shows, every night they got to do jokes.
Yeah. It's like pornography, like, though, to look at your hate, your troll comments. It's pornography for us. That's what people don't understand. Because people tell me all the time, you give the trolls too much attention. It's like, I don't need to give the people that get me attention. It's these people that are like, you know, coming at me like, you know. So it's like, well, it's like beauty, pornography. We got to get it. It's
bad.
The
beauty of it has become, I have kind of like a little bit of a radar on my mind. So, gosh, part of social media now is like, when you post something, don't just post it and be like, I'm out. You got to kind of interact a little bit so the algorithm knows that you're present, and then it'll push it further, whatever. So usually when I post something, let's say on Instagram, for the next 15, 20 minutes, I just look at comments and maybe give it a heart or say, oh, thank you so much or whatever. Just interact for 15, 20, I'm done. And I have this little, you know, I have a gauge in my head, right? If I post something that's, you know, trying to be funny, or it's a flyer for a show, and someone comes down and posts either something, you know, political or just like nasty or whatever. The beauty of these apps now is just you go, and it feels good. You go block, you know, block, delete. Okay. And I love doing that because I'm like, get the hell, I don't need you in my life with your petty bullshit trolling. And I just get rid of these mofos.
You know what? I don't do block. I do restrict and I do mute on Twitter. And the reason is like when you block somebody, you give them a little bit where they think they got to you. So they're like, so then they repost, they repost a picture of like, I'm blocked by Maz Jobrani. And then they do that. So then they have their whatever. I like restrict. I don't know if you know what restrict does. It lets them think that the post is there. And only they see it.
Hilarious.
So I feel like I'm letting them have that outlet. They're screaming into the ether. And I think that's great. Same thing with mute. I just mute people. When they say some nonsense on you know, like I had this one guy, I remember he said he was like, you know, he looks at the pie and he's like, you know, you don't think Trump's qualified? And he's like trying to get my educational background. He's like, where have you been? And, you know, I think like that's like saying I can't criticize a movie, you know, if I can't do the action that the movie's doing. No, I'm right, a fan. Right. I can have an opinion of people doing stuff and being like, I don't think they're doing that well. I'm not saying I could do it. I can't do it either. You know what I mean? Yeah. But I just mute this guy so that he can continue to talk. He can continue to put his, you know, whatever. I don't ever see it. And the point of that is for me to see it, right? So I don't know. I know what you're saying, though. But then I feel like even that's too much energy when you go in and you block. Because then it turns into a thing, too. Like, that's actually a thing on YouTube where you have these, like, troller YouTube channels who, like, once you block a comment, they're all over that. Oh, you're blocking people? You're not letting people get your thoughts out? You know, then that turns into a whole thing too. But
you know what? My whole thing is like, yeah, motherfucker, I'm blocking you. You're out of here. Like, I sometimes take pleasure in going, I know what you're saying. Because for a minute I was like, do I want to like you said, give them. I blocked some dude on, I don't know what it was. He asked something stupid. It was the same kind of political shit. He asked something about, you know, my political stand. And I was like, and the way he asked it, because I've also had people come up to me and be like, hey, let me ask you a question. You know, what are your thoughts on, you know, all these organizations?
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, thank you for asking in a respectful way. Here's my thoughts.
Yeah.
This guy came at me in a kind of like in an aggressive way. And I was like, block. And then the next thing I know, he's posting on, he took it and he posted something on his Facebook saying, oh, I asked Maz Jobrani this question and then he blocked me and blah, 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 blah. And then I'm like, who is this guy? So I'm starting to research it a bit. And I usually don't spend too much time on all this shit, be honest with you. It's like, if I see it and if it's like, if it's dirty or something, I get rid of it. If it's like harsh like that, I just get rid of it. But this guy's like, who is this guy? So then I'm looking at his post. And then underneath his post, there's like different people commenting going, yeah, I never liked that guy in the first place. And I'm like, who are these people?
Yeah,
and it's dawning on me more and more that they just don't like my politics. And I'm like, well, there's nothing I can do here. Yeah. And then it dawns on me as I'm doing the research, because he says something like, oh, I acted with him on Superior Donuts. And I'm like, he acted? And I was like, oh my God, this guy was an extra on the TV show I was on. And so he's one of these guys who's trying to be an
actor.
Yeah,
let's tone it down. You know, I like when they say that. Oh, I was work. Remember when we worked together? Nah, exactly. Bitch, we didn't work together.
but then I'm thinking to myself, God, what a dick, because he probably on that set, if he came up to me and said anything, I probably was very nice and was like, yeah, you got to do this, do that. I don't know what my interaction was with him, but I'm always very, very encouraging and
yeah, you supportive. You give people too much time, and that's why they think they can do that.
But that's the thing. So once this guy's going that far, I'm like, dude, I go, this guy has nothing better going on in his life, because listen, ultimately, end of the day, when you put that phone down and you look around you and you're like, oh, there's trees and grass and my kids and my wife and a dog and there's things I'd rather do. So I know you've spent time away from your phone for like several hours and you're like, God, I feel pretty good.
I'm almost glad when I don't see a hateful comment. I hate that, like, you kind of go back and you go, oh, I wish I hadn't have seen that because I thought this was fine. And now I'm in my head, you know?
Yeah. No, it's crazy because it's this reality. And some people, unfortunately, live deeper in it. And then there's the ones who I've done stuff before, whether it's an IG live or like a post where I posted it. I'm done. I'm not looking at the, you know, it's doing really well. So it's getting a lot of comments and I'm like, I'm overwhelmed. I'm not going to sit here and look at everyone. Then somebody will message me and be like, hey, this guy, Fred, who was commenting on your stuff was really rude. And I said something to him. Now he said this to me. And I'm like, oh Fred.
My God. I'm now, like, now you're like, I'm that, like, now you're like, what are you, the principal? You know, so somebody's coming to snitch.
So now I got to go. I got to go find Fred and ban Fred.
Yeah, man. I had a thing just recently. It's funny, you know, guy, because what you're talking about is this goes back to reiterating what you said about people being the hero of their own story. And this is actually a great example of this. You know, guy comments under my video of my lady and mine. And he calls her stupid. He was like, you know, oh, she's so sweet, but so I wrote back and I was like, why is this okay? Like, why do you think that this is okay? You know, because sometimes that's the way to go with it, is just put it out there with people. Like another quick example, somebody said to me like something about like, you know, when are you going to tell everybody how gay you are? You know, and then I wrote back. I said, why is that a problem for you? You know, like if this were true, why do you have a problem with it? Well, a guy deleted that because then it put it on him. Like some people say that kind of stuff where they go, well, you're a this. And you go, okay, let's say I am. What's your problem? And now it turns into the people going like, oh, you don't like, you know what I mean? So he just deleted it because it was just, it's just dumb. And that's how I handle it sometimes. Anyway, this guy comes, I'd say that to him. And then he writes back a whole story about how, well, my son watches you Twitch and he sent you $2 super chat. It's like how they tip you. And then later asked, hey, can I play a game with you? And I said, like, why would I play with you? Right. And then he goes in about, now he's trying to justify him calling my girl stupid because of this thing that happened with his kid. All right. I get it. I'm the hero of my story. My story is everybody that I play that are watching me wants to play with me. I get countless messages on here all the time about play with me, play with me, play with me, play with me, play with me. You know, and so I have to be. I can't play. I don't know you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Could I have said it a nicer way? But if you're watching my stream, I'm being myself. You know how I am. This is like you're getting a piece of me. So if I'm saying to the guy like, nah, man. Like, I'm saying to somebody, I don't know who it is. I don't know if it's a woman, a man, a boy, whatever. I'm just like, why'd I play with you? You know, it's like, it's a real serious question. Like, and you think, and now I'm looking back like, oh, so you think $2 means I give you all my time? You know what I mean? It's like, so, but he's the hero of his story. He's a dad who's trying to stick up for his kid. And it's like, I just think like, what are you talking about? So that's one of those moments where you just go like, damn, maybe I shouldn't have even interacted with the guy. Maybe I should have just muted the guy, blocked the guy and been like, all right, you did something that I don't appreciate and I want you out of here. But then you try to give people time to try to be like, hey man, why would you do this? And they still come back and try to justify their stupid behavior. That's the thing about it. It's not even like if he would have said to me, you know what, my bad, you're right. I shouldn't have said that. But you know what? You did something to me that made me feel this way.
Right.
I saw a guy, Marcellus Wiley. He's on Speak for Yourself. He said the greatest thing about, you know, that he learned from going to therapy is that there's two times you should apologize. When you're wrong, and the other time is when you make someone feel bad.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and it's like that second one is hard. That second one is because we all feel like we're justified to say and do the things that we do.
Yeah. Well, that goes back to what that being the hero of your own story versus the other, you know, being the villain or the second or third character in someone else's story. I had another guy on my podcast who is in a throuple. It's three men and they've adopted two children and he's a doctor and he's very well-spoken. And we asked them, we go, what happens when two of you are upset at the third one? Like, how does that work out? And he said, you know, we step away and we take our time. We come back and we have a rule. He goes, we first say, I thought about what I said. I'm sorry if it upset you for whatever reason. I've thought about how it affected you. They put themselves in the other guy's shoes and think about it and come back and then go, and by the way, I apologize. And then he said the other person has a chance to either say I accept it or I don't.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of times in our lives, especially with Twitter, especially with social media, we don't empathize. We don't put ourselves in other people's shoes. Like you just said, exactly. That dad could have come back and been like, hey, man, my bad if that made you feel bad. But just so you know, I'm lashing out because of X, Y, and Z.
Exactly. In which case you probably—
yeah, you probably would have been like, oh, man, my bad. You know what? Let's do a special— game day with your son, whatever. You
probably would have come around. I ain't doing that. No, but I understand. Like, I understand. It's like, you know, but what I'm saying is, I understand. That's the thing I'm saying. Like, I understand. Yeah. But everybody has their thing. It's like, it just goes back to, like, have you ever seen these kind of posts? Have somebody posted this about you where it's like, you know, I saw Maz at a restaurant and I asked him for a picture and he said no. And what a dick. Like, doesn't he know that the fans are the reason why he made it? Like, that kind of train of thought, you know, for them, they feel so justified that they don't even think about, like, well, I'm eating with my family. I'm on a date. Or I'm on a thing. Do I have to be this person for you all the time? And when does it end? So does everybody in this restaurant get to take a picture with me right now? Or is it just you? You know, well, it's like when somebody comes and goes, you know, I hate being that guy, but Maz, can you? I always stop them and go, uh-uh. You love being that guy.
Right. Well, first of all, Eric, I never say no to the pictures. That's you, buddy. So saw you say no to that poor kid.
Wait a minute. You are lying through your teeth. You do not say yes every single time.
No, you do not.
You just don't try to make yourself look good.
Are you kidding me?
Okay.
Bro.
How many? So if 10 people in a restaurant, you're with your family?
No. You know, I get in trouble with my wife because she goes, you're a pleaser because I agree.
You go too far. Remember that time at the Comedy Magic Club? You letting this guy, I'm looking at your face. He's clearly annoying you. He's clearly getting, you know, and you give, I tried to say to him, hey man, okay, thank you, but we're getting ready for the show. There's nothing wrong with letting people know that they're overstepping their bounds. Yeah, you know what I mean? They're overstepping.
But you're right, though. I think people, like you said, they're seeing the world in their way. They feel like you owe them something. You made me think of a few things. First of all, I don't put my wife, for the most part, I don't put her on my social media because she is uncomfortable with it. As much as my wife is beautiful and she should be the actress in the family and I should be the lawyer or whatever, the person behind the scenes. But she's just not comfortable with it. And one time, you know, again, Persians can be very racist. They can be very, and there's a lot of great, great Persians. There's a lot of great people from every background. But I think what happens is when you make it from a community, they feel like they own you. Yeah. So I think this one lady one time, I posted something and some lady like commented like, why would you marry an Indian? Like she's ugly or whatever. Meanwhile, I'm like, who's this bitch? And that pissed me off. And that got me like, I can imagine.
Yeah, dude.
And so my poor wife from then, she was like, I don't even want to necessarily be put out there. And I was like, I totally get it. And I'm very respectful of that. And I try to avoid, because I know she's beautiful and I know she's a great person. But like you said, some asshole just to make a comment is going to make a comment. And then that's just going to get me all riled up. So
I'm telling my girl right now, she's doing her own vlog now. And she comes on my podcast. So she's trying to just think. So I said to her, I was like, you have to be ready for the negativity because it's going to be a lot because we have an age difference. You know, I'm older than her. Yeah. You know what I mean? And it's like, so there's all that. It's like, gold digger. She's out of your league, Griffin. It's like all these things that we're dealing with. But she's taking it like a trooper because she's been a model for 15 years. You know what I mean? So there's always going to be, you know.
You got to have a sense of humor about it and realize, like, again, when I'm on, it's funny, I'm on my Instagram live sometimes, fan troll. And that same troll will keep coming back. And then eventually there's time. I don't do them as much anymore, but I'd be doing it. And that troll is just dying for attention. And then all of a sudden the fans start talking to the troll. So I'm talking, and I see the comments. Now they're going back and forth.
I know.
So sometimes I just turn around. I go, you know what, everybody, let's just stop for a second. Hey, motherfucker, just shut the, like, it's fun for me to just cuss him out. And then when he comes back up, I'm like, you're still there? Okay, no more talking to this guy. It's just, but take it with a grain of salt and be like, I'm moving on from that. So that's one thing, which is like, they're going to come at you and you got to just be like, eh, whatever. Now, the thing about what you were just saying, like once in a while you read a comment, you're like, oh, that kind of hurt. So I had my new special just came out. And obviously when your special comes out, you want people to watch it.
Yeah. You want people to like
it. So you promote. And then once in a while, a random person will come on and be like, hey, I saw your, I just discovered you. This is great. You're like, oh, great. New fan. Yeah. So some girl, because the special was shot mostly in Dubai,
Wait, and by the way, I know while you're talking about this, can you actually, because we will end with this, actually, I want you to talk about the special, how you felt about it, where you did it, what it's called, yeah. Where can they find it, and, you know, just the whole process, because it is fascinating to know that you went to Dubai, and I've been to Dubai with you, and watching yeah. how just beloved you are in that part of the world. So, but anyways, go on. I didn't mean to cut you off.
But I'll end with that story, but what was interesting was, so I'm on my Twitter, and this girl starts her tweet. It says something like, "Just watched Maz Jobrani's special on Peacock," and I was like, "Oh, great, another fan." And then she's like, "It was filmed in Dubai, and it's the utmost ignorance that he's saying Dubai is a great place. He didn't talk about like the laborers who've died building those buildings or something like that." I'm like, "Bitch, you can't know."
Well, like, yeah. You can't, you know what? If I go into the details like that, you can't talk about anything. You know what's crazy about that? That would be like, then you, that would be like someone going like, well, America's a great place to live. Then you go, oh, so you mean slavery? You mean the place yeah. that had slavery? Yeah. You mean the place yeah. that had this? You mean the place that had not, you know, Timothy McVeigh, the place that had, you know, like you could, so if you thought like that at all times, you could delve into the details and no one's safe. Nothing can be talked about.
But it's funny because part of my mind was like, okay, well, I got one more viewer. That was good. I was like, at least he watched it. But the other part of me was like, exactly what you just said. I was like, geez, it's a comedy special shot in Dubai. So for me to like, because then I went on our page to see like, who is she? She's like some activist. I was like, for me to like please you with what your agenda is, I would have had to go up in front of an audience in Dubai and be like,
"You guys,
hey,
suck.
Motherfuckers, you guys are, you know, you guys are killing people in buildings." Now the truth is, yes, there's the worker conditions in Dubai. There's a lot of issues with it.
But that's not what I'm talking about now.
But it's a comedy show.
Yeah,
and,
man.
And you missed the message is like, because part of the message that came out of the show unintentionally, but it came out of the show regardless, was when I started doing my crowd work, every time I talked to somebody, they were from a different part of the world. So there was Emiratis, you know, from Dubai. Yeah, there was Iranians.
The expats.
There was Americans.
Yeah.
There was Turkish people. There was Cubans. There was someone from Jakarta. I mean, it was international. And anybody who's traveled there, as you have, knows that places like Dubai and Doha and some of these countries that are relatively young and newly built have people from all over the world. It's a very international setup. So that was kind of a message that I was like, okay, let me put this message out there so people watching this in America, if they're watching it somewhere in middle America, they might be like, oh, I thought they were all terrorists who wanted to kill us.
Right,
really,
right.
It's a bunch of people living their lives.
No, but dude, how many times have you watched something? Like, let's say you're watching, like, say, a black comedian, and all of a sudden they're talking about how terrible white people are. Imagine, you know, you're white and you're watching it. At a certain point, you have a moment of like, here we go. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like sometimes, sometimes that. And that's a fair reaction. You know, it's like I'm watching Aladdin, the new Aladdin, the remake, you know?
Yeah.
And they got this new song where it's like the princess is singing and it's sort of this like pro-feminist, like, I'm a woman, you know? And I was like in the theater like, here we go. Because it's like, you know, it's like, damn, you can't even in the Disney universe, we can't just, you know, we can't just have a vanilla...
Yeah.
You know, it's like so there is that reaction. So, you know, but again,
if that lady's an activist, what we said,
if she's an activist, she's a hero. She's a hero activist.
Yeah. Well, it goes back to what we said in the beginning of the podcast, which is you just got to be your authentic self. And in that case, my message in filming it in Dubai was to show America that there are people in the Middle East living their lives, just doing their thing. And look, they laugh at comedy and there we are. Like that's been a big goal of mine from the beginning of my career, which was to show people from my background and people from my similar background laughing and different than what we were used to seeing them in Steven Seagal and Chuck Norris movies and whoever else, the SEAL team or whatever it is. So
yeah, it's not
the
just,
story of it, the story of it goes, you know, you and I both know we tour, right. You end up with an hour plus. You're like, oh my God, this stuff's ready to go. It's cooked. I got to do it. So for a while, it had been cooked. Now, my previous special was shot in 2017. It was a Netflix special called Immigrant. And that one was shot in spring of 2017, came out in the summer of 2017, shot in DC at the Kennedy Center. a lot of political stuff in there. Right. And Netflix had actually said, we will shoot this. So they gave us, you know, the money to shoot it. When they pay you to shoot a Netflix special, they go, we don't want you to, like, you know, do a show in a tiny room and spend $10 on production and pocket the rest of the money. They go, we want you to spend the money on the production. So it looked bigger. We had the funds. We're ready to go. This time around, I'd say for a good year or so, at least year and a half, I felt ready. I was like, I'm ready for my next special. Now, a couple of things came up. First of all, you want to call it a special, then you should shoot it in a place that's somewhat special. So I'd done the Kennedy Center, I'd done LA, I'd done Sweden, and I'm like, what's the next place? So in thinking about it, Middle East came up as one of the places. I've never shot a special. I go, what about the Middle East? Okay, that's a good idea. Then, you know, we go to Netflix, and Netflix now is a little pickier with what they're doing and all that. A lot of us comedians know that, like, people think like, oh, you should have your next Netflix special. We go, well, it's not as easy as you think. So sometimes, you know, you go, okay, let me just go out and shoot it myself and then come back and show it and sell it. So I was touring in the end of 2019 in the Middle East, and it was kind of a last minute thing. I was like, it's been in my mind to shoot something there. Let me hit up my buddy, see if we can shoot something in Dubai. And the weather's nice in December. So we were thinking, hey, let's do an outdoor, like with all the buildings in the background. Let's do, or maybe like a desert back. Let's do something kind of cool and different. Again, you know how it is, because we didn't have Netflix behind me going, do whatever you want, or some big, you know, some network behind me going, here's a ton of money, go do it. I had to fund it. And we were time constrained. So the producer originally was like, yeah, we'll do it outdoors, this, this, and that. Then he calls me up. He's like, listen, man, the outdoor thing's not going to work. Too much noise, this, that, whatever. You know, you need permits. He's like, but we're going to build some tents. And I was like, well, what's the point of building a tent? But he did it regardless. And we filmed it in this tent in Dubai. And so production value, it still looks nice, but it's not as big as my previous one. But more importantly, I thought, because I filmed it December of 2019, and I thought, okay, I'll go back home, and in early 2020, I'll go back to Netflix, and maybe whoever else the buyers are, Showtime, Comedy Central, someone will pick it up, we'll be good to go. Well, the pandemic hit, and then all of a sudden, it's like, hold. And then the thing that was interesting to me was, I saw a few comedy specials come out that had been shot before the pandemic. They came out when we were on lockdown.
Yeah.
And I'm watching it. I'm like, this looks like they shot it on Mars, because a bunch of people are next to each other.
I know.
Right? No one's masked.
I thought to myself, this is going to be some of the last, like, are we ever going to see this again? I kept thinking that when I was watching like Seinfeld, and I was like, oh no, we'll never do this again, you know?
And you're sitting there going like, this material is like, they're talking about traffic. Like what is that? That doesn't even exist anymore. And so I realized to myself, I said, you know what, if I'm going to put out a special, I got to do something that at least I'm given a nod and a wink to say, I know what's going on. So what I did was, we got with Comedy Dynamics, and they sent me a couple of iPads to set up in my house. This is like under the first lockdown where everyone was like, make sure you sanitize everything and keep your distance. So it's me in like a, basically a little closet in my house with the two iPads, and the director's on the phone, like on FaceTime, and we're doing my, you know, coronavirus material, you know? So we did that. So at the top of the special, when people watch the special, they'll see it's like 3 minutes of, or 5 minutes or so.
Like, it's like an intro. Just,
you know, kind of giving you what's going on. And then I go, now let's go watch what I filmed in Dubai.
Yeah.
And then you go and you see that special. And for the most part, a lot of it is relatable and evergreen. There's some Trump jokes there where you might be like, well, he's no longer around. But still, that was then. And then I come back at the end and I do a couple more minutes in the closet. So I bookended in a way which I felt happy with, to be able to go, this is what
it
is.
And you can find it on Peacock, right?
It's on Peacock, which is another thing which is interesting. Because again, I told them, because there was Trump jokes, because there was some other jokes, I was like, you guys got to put this out before the elections, before the elections. Well, Peacock had their own bigger plan, which was to bring The Office to Peacock in January, and by the end of January, launch a bunch of comedy specials on there. So if you go to Peacock now, they've got like 20, 30 comedy specials. Mine's one of the originals. There's one other original, but I guess they're in the comedy game. And it was pretty cool. Like the first night when it was on. I was on their landing page right next to the office. Right. I was like, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, we'll see how it goes,
like,
man.
I say, check that out. Check out the special and actually look at his other specials too. And once again, also shout out when you were talking about what that you did it in Dubai and you know, showing people how it's different. You know, that shout out again to our, you know, to Ahmed Ahmed for doing Just Like Us, which was a, you know, comedy documentary. I think it's still on Netflix. I'm not sure, but you guys should look for that, because that's, I went on tour with them, with Maz and Ahmed, and we went out there and you know, showing, and that's what I learned, is the reason why I'm bringing it up. It's like, oh yeah, these people are just like us. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, mm-hmm, that's what you learn. And look, man, I appreciate you being on the podcast. And, you know, I'm going to send everybody your way. I'm going to put all the information below, so you guys check out the links and support my guy here. And, you know, be your authentic self.
Hey, man, be your authentic self. Realize you're the hero of your story, but the villain of others. So remember to, let, you know, try and see the world from other people's point of view that are important to you. Be sensitive. And hey, I appreciate you, Eric. We've always been friends, and yeah, I appreciate you. It's always nice to, even under the pandemic, run into each other at some of these outdoor
shows. Yeah, I know. That was great. Yeah,
up,
man. It was good to catch up, you know. And, yeah, like, you know, yeah, I'll hit you up in another few months, and we could just really, like, really look at the world again. Like, we can like, do a recap of, this is what Trump versus Biden. This is what the world looks like. Yeah. You know what I mean? I'm even surprised that we went this long and we didn't even talk about none of that stuff, because that's what we talk about a lot. When Maz and I get together, we love having a back and forth about just, like, different political beliefs and where we are and the things, because it's so nuanced with the take a drink. It's so nuanced with another comedian, you know. Not everything's black and white with us, which is, I really love.
Well, what I will say this to end it all is that I've been talking about this, like, just, and I don't know where we're headed with Biden or whatever, but it's nice to wake up in the morning and not feel inundated with 100 tweets about Rosie O'Donnell and then, you know, and this, and, you know, whatever it is, you know, Rocket Man or whatever it is. It's just nice to wake up and be like, oh, we have real problems. The, you know, the,
we're trying to deal with those
things. The earth is melting. Yes, let's talk about it. You know, it's like, yes, you know. So I'm happy.
That's good, man. And much love to your family. And I will talk to you soon, my brother.
Be well, my brother. Be well.
You
take
too.
Care.
Thank you. Well, that was my buddy Maz Jobrani. Be the hero of your own story. That was the message for that right now. Be the hero of your own story. Guys, thanks for being here as always. I'm probably going to be, after this premiere, I probably did a premiere of this, or after, you know, after you're watching this, make sure you go check me out on Twitch. Or just check for me daily. You know, just make sure, turn on the notifications for my podcast and turn on the notifications for Twitch, so you can catch me live. And, you know, I'm very interactive. I talk a lot of smack to the chat. I'm a comic. Ooh, excuse me. What's going on? Heartburn. But anyways, thanks for being here. As always, follow me, and I appreciate you guys for your support, your likes. I love the love. I love the hate. All, everything that goes with being a, you know, public figure on the internet. It's all for it, and we'll try to be, all of us will try to be sensitive in our own way to everyone else, and we'll all figure it out. But thanks again, and I will see you next week.